celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves. Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
Our region is facing an exceptional drought, and the potential for wildfire is high.
And agencies around the state are working together to meet the threat.
Wildfire could strike in your community next. Are you prepared? Plan ahead now by remembering, ready, set, go. Be ready by maintaining 100 feet of defensible space around your home and taking steps to harden your home and make it more fire resistant.
Be set by having a wildfire action plan and knowing what important items to take with you in the event of an evacuation.
And lastly, go. Evacuate early when a wildfire strikes in your area.
We're prepared.
We're prepared.
We're prepared for wildfire. Are you?
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE. Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
When carrying a firearm, always treat it as if it were loaded. Always keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you're ready to fire. Never let your muzzle point at anything you're not willing to destroy. And always be sure of your target, its environment, and any other safety hazards. This announcement's been brought to you by TaylorGunsmithing.com.
I'm Governor Spencer Cox. We live in an incredible state, and this time of year, my family and I, we love to ride. Unfortunately, we've had too many fatalities this year. And while safety equipment is critical, it's not enough. Remember to always be aware of your surroundings and never ride beyond your capabilities. We want to make sure that you make it home safe. And never forget, nobody is invincible.
Faster Utah is proactive about school safety. For more information, fasterutah.org.
Summer has officially begun, and Sportsman's Warehouse has everything you need for your next outdoor adventure. From hiking to camping to shooting, ready for some fishing? Sportsman's Warehouse has all the rods, reels, baits, and nets you need for success. And hunting season will be here before you know it, so bring in your bows for free tune-ups. The best part of all is that at Sportsman's Warehouse, you'll find knowledgeable people who are passionate about what they do, and they will get you just what you need. Sportsman's Warehouse. Take it outside.
Western Life. Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Camping in the mountains, fishing in a stream. The great outdoors is where you want to be.
Conrad Richter joins us once again with Richter's Herbs. Thank you for taking time with us. It is an honor having you back on the program.
It is always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to join you. Thank you for having me.
This is going to be a lot of fun with you today. We are in the summer months right now, and it is hot. It is dry. Now, with the heat being on, hydration is a big deal. Refreshing beverages make a big difference, and I've been picking a lot of peppermint leaves and dropping them in water and enjoying that cold beverage, but I know there's a lot of other good ones that you'd recommend.
Well, yes, indeed. Any herbal tea is usually going to be very beneficial to you. But let me begin by saying that this is not necessarily a herb. It is a plant, of course, but we don't think of it necessarily as a herb, but plain old coconuts, coconut water especially. I learned this. My wife is from Africa, and we go fairly frequently to Africa, and I'm one of those of North European stock that, for whatever reason, we have a difficult time, or at least I have a difficult time, knowing when I'm dehydrated, and I just don't drink enough water. And before long, and when I'm in a place like Africa, I'm totally dehydrated, and I start getting headaches and my muscle weakness, and I started feeling pretty miserable. The thing that always, always fixes the problem almost instantly, like within a day anyway, is fresh coconut water. There is something in coconut water, I don't know what it is, but something in it that somehow completely rehydrates, helps rehydrate you, and also restores electrolyte balance. There's something special about it, and I swear by it. So let's face it, we don't always have coconut water around, so what are you going to do instead? Well, for one thing, you want to avoid anything with caffeine in it, because caffeine is what we call a diuretic, which means that you'll be urinating more than you otherwise would, and that, of course, means that you're losing water. And so if you're drinking, for example, regular tea, or if you're drinking these energy drinks, which are fundamentally based on caffeine in one form or another, and you are, sure, you're adding water from the tea or from the energy drink, but you're also, because of the diuretic effect, you're also expelling it. You're having to go to the washroom more often. So it's kind of counterproductive. It's not that caffeine would on its own dehydrate you, but it just makes it more difficult to rehydrate. So definitely start out, avoid that. Now, if you like many people, some people just can't drink a lot of water. They're just tired of it, or for whatever reason don't like it, and they want to have something in their water that makes it a little easier to take larger quantities of. And herbal teas are perfect. You mentioned mint. Definitely mint, lemon balm, any of the major herbal tea herbs that you can use would work. You can make a tea and you can cool it down and take it in a thermos to go out for a hike or go camping or what have you. Or if you're working outside, good to have it. It'll help keep you hydrated. And so you can experiment with these mixtures. Don't just use one herb. Try adding different herbs. Now, there is one herb which not only is beneficial just for drinking and helping to rehydrate, but also can help lower the temperature of your body, and that's borage. Now, borage is an annual plant, so you have to reseed it every year. It's not one of the best-known herbs. I mean, if you go to a garden center and you're looking for the herb section, chances are you won't find borage there. Probably would have to plan ahead and get some seeds and grow it in your garden. But borage is very easy to grow, and handy to have around. And there's something in that voyage, and I tried to find something from the scientific literature to back me up on this, but I wasn't successful in finding anything in the time that I was looking. But I know that there is a long-standing tradition that borage can help lower the body temperature when it's taken as a tea. And so it has a bit of a cucumbery taste. So for some people, that's hard to take. So what I recommend is to blend it with other herbs like mint or lemon balm or lemon verbena and combine them in different ways. And in part, you're going to get some of that. I don't know if this is the correct term, but it's kind of like a refrigerant-like effect.
That's fascinating to me. Personally, I like the flavor of cucumbers. I don't have a problem with that, but I didn't know that it had a cooling effect, too.
I'm sure that with time, somebody will do some kind of a study and find out what it is that's in borage that does that. But the traditional literature, you will find that if you dig deeply into traditional literature on borage, you will find references to its use for that purpose in cooling down the body.
So if in combination with a mojito mint or one of your other mints or maybe, like you said, the lemon verbena or some of these other ones, you can make quite a nice refreshing beverage. A little ice to it, and man, you'd be set for the heat.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the fun. We talked about this before. This is the fun of teas, is that you can experiment, try different blends. When I introduce friends to the art of blending teas and they start getting into it, they get so excited. It's such a fun thing to do.
And I think a lot of people overlook these herbs during the summer months. You know, they know of iced tea, but they don't get beyond any of that for some reason. They only consider it as a hot beverage in the wintertime. And these are so delightful in the summer months. Hops. I've really enjoyed hops in the cold water, too. And, man, they are delicious. They have kind of a lemony note, too.
Hops has a little bit of astringent as well. And that astringency helps to reduce the sense of thirst. It makes you feel like you've had enough. You don't have to keep drinking. So that astringency comes from, usually, most of these herbs, it comes from a group of compounds called phenolics. And it's also very important in wound healing. Like, for example, the plantain we talked about has a bit of astringency.
I like the resources on your website because a lot of these plants that I'm not familiar with, you have descriptions of how they were used, and there's a wealth of information right there on your website.
Absolutely, yeah. Take the time. Go take a look and see. I mean, we have probably upwards to 1,000 different herbs, so you won't get through our website that quickly. You'll have to spend some time going through some of these herbs. But I think the thing that we are trying to accomplish with what we put on our website is to inspire people. So we provide just enough information that you'll know what the plant can do, maybe a little bit of information how to grow it, and then you take it from there. You'll probably have to do a bit more research. You have to learn how to use it, how to grow it, and when to harvest and that sort of thing. But the website is principally designed to get your interest going.
It does that to me all the time. Now, you also mentioned just barely harvesting. You know, right now we're actually starting to harvest a lot of these herbs. When are the best times to harvest them? Is it before bloom, after bloom? When is the best time to capture most of those oils, most of that power within these herbs?
Well, many of the herbs we harvest because we like the smells. And I'm speaking now principally about culinary herbs, the basil and the thyme and sages and those kinds of herbs. And they have flavor and they have fragrance because of their essential oils. And so when you harvest, the optimal time to harvest centers on when the plant has the most oil. And even though, let's say, a plant like lemon balm, even from the earliest stages, if you squeeze the leaf, you smell the lemon scent, it is well established that just prior to the full opening of the flowers is when the plant has the highest concentration of essential oil. And that is true of many, many other scented herbs, lavenders and rosemary and savory and many, many other herbs are in the same situation. So the general rule is that you collect those herbs just as the plant is coming into bloom. And you would harvest them generally in the early part of the day on a sunny day. Don't leave it too late in the day, because by the late part of the day, oftentimes the oils are already lost for the day, because with the sun and the warmth, the oils are being released to the air. And if you get to them late in the day, you've already lost some of the oils. So generally, we collect them earlier in the day, but not too early, because you don't want to collect them when they're still wet from dew and early morning dew. So you wait for the early morning dew to dry off, say around 10 or 11 in the day on a sunny day, and that would be the best time to collect them. And you collect them, as I said, when the flowers are beginning to open or halfway open. You catch them at the very best, top quality material.
Starting off with the best quality you can will ensure that you have the best quality at the end.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You're maximizing the medicinal or the flavor and component. So that's true of those essential oils or the scented herbs. It's a very different story, though, for other herbs that are used, for which you use other parts. For instance, you mentioned comfrey. Well, you could use the leaves, and you can also use the roots. The roots are actually more effective. They have higher allantoin concentration and definitely a lot more mucilage, so they have a greater healing potential. But roots, although you can always collect roots any time of year from spring to the end of fall, if you really want to optimize, and this is what commercial growers would do, they want to optimize the strength of these herbs. They'll wait until the first frost in fall, when the plants are beginning to move their nutrients from a leafy structure back down into the roots to overwinter. So they're moving the vital potential of a plant back down into the roots. So that's when the roots are commercially harvested. So a lot of root plants, such as the comfrey and many other root herbs, are harvested at that time of year. But for many people, the differences between the optimum best and, say, second best or third best times is not that great. And so I'm not strict about the exact time to harvest. If you need to make a good cup of lemon balm tea and it's in the end of May and you've got a decent plant that's growing and you want to make a cup of tea, by all means, go ahead and do it. If you want to collect the material and dry it for next year or for winter use, then maybe wait. Wait until the plant's starting to bloom and then collect it and dry it for future use.
Hey, I was wondering also, I understand what you're saying with commercial growers digging them up. I know particularly comfrey can be very aggressive coming back again. So when you harvest them, I guess you just take a couple roots of them like you would with horseradish or something and try to leave enough of them back so that they can resupply themselves. Is that how it's done usually?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, in comfrey, it's pretty hard to eradicate. I'm sure you've noticed that. It's a pretty aggressive plant, and it sends its roots down at least a couple of feet. And every little piece of it potentially could become a new plant. If you dig up the big mass of roots that is close to the surface, very often the smaller pieces further down will recover and grow. And so it's pretty hard to eradicate a comfrey patch once you've got one established. Other herbs, though, are not quite as aggressive as comfrey. So, for example, a herb like valerian, if you dig up the roots of that one, it may not come back the following year. So, yes, it is wise then to leave a few roots behind so that you'll have a crop again the following year. So in the case of valerian, which, by the way, is a wonderful herb for helping you to go to sleep or to settle your nerves, the roots are used. You might want to grow a half a dozen or a dozen plants in a section of a garden and then harvest three or four for future use, maybe make a tincture out of it or just dry the roots, and then leave behind the rest of the plants to continue to provide for future use.
Good information. Now, although we've got a really nice, robust patch of this stuff growing, I've been still a little hesitant of digging them up and fear that I would eradicate them accidentally. And I fear the same thing also with echinacea. We got a few of them growing, and, you know, they make some really nice heads and everything, but I worry about digging them up for fear that I may not see him come back the next season.
Yeah, well, echinacea tends to form a bit of a clump eventually. You know, it sort of produces more shoots and a bigger root mass. So sometimes you can just cut the root mass in half and plant half of it back and take what you're going to use for harvesting. So in some cases, there are different ways to handle it. If you look at a plant like ginseng, for example, I mean, you don't have it growing in your area, but it was widespread in our area. It's no longer found in the wild anymore here, but it is grown commercially in our area. And of course, it is still found wild in many eastern states. But it is a root that is very difficult to save. Once you pull that root, it's not going to come back. And so what you got to hope for is that you've allowed the plant to produce berries and start new plants growing around in the area. So rather than harvesting a whole clump, a whole area, you would just pick here and there and allow the plant or the patch to continue. So each herb has its differences, and the more you know about them, the more you know how to harvest in a responsible way. And this has become an increasingly a concern. There's a lot of over-harvesting underway right now. Many, many herbs that were once widespread are no longer available, are no longer found in the wild. And it's because of over-harvesting, because of the demands of the herb industry. And there is an organization called the United Plant Savers, which is dedicated to saving these native medicinal plants, specifically the medicinal plants in North America. And they've even gotten to the point where they're encouraging people to plant little sanctuaries, even on your personal property, to help save some of these endangered medicinal plants. So it's judicial harvesting from the wild that's really important, and it's important to know as much as you can about the plant. Is it a plant that is widespread and you don't have to worry too much about it, or is it a plant that is becoming scarcer and potentially endangered? Well, then you will be much more careful on how you harvest.
That makes sense. Yeah, I've been really careful. I'm fearful that I may mess them up, so I give them as much room as they can. And maybe I can be a little more aggressive then, particularly with some of these plants like comfrey. Echinacea, I don't think I have enough plants yet to do too much harvest yet. I assume I could still harvest flowers, though, if I needed to, or some of the tops for some medicinal benefits.
Yes, echinacea, you can use, as you say, the flowers. You can even use the seeds, in fact. And in the certain species, you can use the leaves as well. Of course, it is the roots that are the most sought after because they're usually the most potent parts of the plant. So it is possible, as you've already observed, that to be judicious in your harvest there, harvest the flowers and harvest some of the leaves, while the plant is building itself up over a couple of years until the roots are plentiful enough that you can maybe divide the crown and then harvest half of the crown.
Having great herbs starts oftentimes with having the right varieties. And you have amazing varieties. You have commercial varieties. You have some that are much more robust than others. I like the fact that you bring in multiple options, different flavors, different options as far as the mints, for example. You must have at least a dozen different mints or more. If people are shopping, it's a great time to start shopping now for fall.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, we have a lot more than a dozen mints, actually. Probably have about two or three dozen mints. I've lost track, actually. There are peppermints, and a number of variations on peppermints, and spearmints, and a whole number of different types of peppermints and spearmints, and then beyond, grapefruit mint and all kinds of other exotic types of mints. But anyway, yes, in general, we do have a lot of interesting varieties that people want to try something a little different, rather than the basic mints that they've maybe grown in the past, or basic basils, or the basic thymes. We try to carry them. And then, as you mentioned, we also have a focus for commercial growers. I think people are still somewhat surprised to know that there is a very vibrant commercial herb-growing industry in North America. There are large acreages of herbs being grown right across the continent. And in some instances, the herbs have been improved through breeding processes to maybe enhance the oil content or enhance the medicinal alkaloid content or whatever. And those varieties we try to carry in our catalog as well, because we're catering not only to the home gardeners or to the hobbyist herb user, we're also focusing on commercial growers and maximizing their crops so that they can sell them to the industry. And increasingly, they're selling their crops even to the large drug companies now.
For a backyard grower, if you have limited space and you want a lot of punch for what you have available for the space, those commercial varieties are really good options. For example, with elderberries, we haven't talked about elderberries today, but with elderberries, you got varieties that kick out a lot more flowers, a lot more berries per space. These are commercial varieties so that they're a lot more robust than some of the other varieties out there, and you can get a lot of benefits from that limited space that you do have available.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I look at not just the elderberry, but we've got other varieties. So, for example, in sorrel, if you happen to be interested in sorrel, sorrel is a spinach-like plant that is, it's not one of the most popular herbs out there, but there are those who love sorrel for what it can do. It's a traditional ingredient in French sorrel soup. But the conventional varieties, when you grow them, they will rapidly go to flower. And when they do, the leaves are not quite as edible or fleshy. So we have a variety that never flowers. It's just a natural mutant that was found that just simply has lost its ability to flower and is only propagated by division. And it's called perfusion sorrel. And we introduced that to the herb industry many, many years ago, I think about 3 decades ago. And it's still a fantastic variety. And so that would be a type of variety that is typically grown by commercial growers. But as you say, it has such benefits to grow in your own garden. Because let's say if you have a relatively small garden and you like a lot of sorrel, but you might have to grow 4 or 5 of the regular garden sorrel, because by the time it goes to seed, or flower and seeds, you don't get as many leaves anymore. You might be able to get away with just 1 perfusion sorrel, because it just never flowers at all. It only produces leaves.
I know you got cilantro that have also that similar characteristic, so that you can have a longer season of harvest instead of having them go right to seed right away.
Yes, the same idea. Well, in fact, in the case of cilantro, it's the same plant as coriander, the spice, the seed spice. It's the same species, but 2 different varieties. So when you want cilantro, you want the variety that doesn't go to flower. So you want one that has delayed flowering. Because when cilantro goes to flower, again, like the sorrel, the leaves become fewer. You don't have as much to harvest, and they generally don't taste as good either. So by getting a variety that is specific for commercial cilantro production, you're getting a variety that has delayed flowering. You're going to get a lot more leaves that you can use as fresh cilantro in your home garden.
I have so much respect for you and your company. I mean, you've built a reputation on providing so many options for so many growers, whether they be commercial growers or backyard growers, and providing them with some sparkle in their gardens. And the Seed Zoo is another one of those elements that you've introduced, where you bring seeds from around the world, and you could actually travel the world without even leaving your backyard.
That's a good thing, don't you think?
Yes.
Bring the world to your garden with all these different plants that we bring ultimately from around the world and make them available to North Americans. So, yes, this has been a fundamental or core project at Richter's from the beginning. I remember back in the 1970s when I first started doing this stuff, helping my parents put together a catalog and ordering seeds from around the world. That was one of the big things that I got excited about, was finding these exotic things that nobody grew or knew about in North America. and talking about them, making the seeds or plants available. And I get really excited when people actually like to grow these things and want to reorder, and before long, these plants become established and are in many gardens all around North America. So this has happened multiple times in the history of our company.
So much respect for you. If folks want more information, if they want to learn more about what you have available, where do they go? Where do they get started?
You can always go to our website at richters.com, and that's spelled richters.com. Richters.com. Yeah, go there. You can download a catalog, or you can just peruse the web catalog and be adventurous. Pick out a few things that you might not have ever thought about growing, or maybe you didn't even hear about, but like the description, and give them a whirl in your garden. And more often than not, I'm sure you'll be pleasantly surprised.
And now is actually a good time to start shopping for this fall and next spring, because in the past couple years, there's been a huge rush on a lot of these things. Limited supplies on many items.
That is so true. We have, at various times in the last 2 years, have run out of things. We still have run out of certain plants. Garlic was in very much short supply last year. So, yeah, if you are interested, better to order sooner than later.
We certainly covered a lot of great ground today. Again, if folks want more information, where do they get started?
You can go to richters.com, richters.com.
Conrad Richter with us once again with Richter's Herbs. Thank you so much. We sure do appreciate you taking time with us today.
Thank you for having me on.
Hey, let's hit the lake. Put on your life jackets and let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I won't drown and I don't have to wear my life jacket? Will I be invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my life jacket too. Anyone can drown, no matter how old they are.
Accidents do happen. Protect yourself and set an example. Wear the proper safety gear when you're on the water. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks, where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks, in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
Don't let your next family outing end in tragedy. Don't drink and ride. Driving an OHV under the influence of alcohol is no different than driving your car under the influence of alcohol. Law enforcement officers will be out checking riders and operators of OHVs. You could end up seeing jail time, loss of driver's license, the same stiff penalties that apply to operating a car. This message is from the Utah Division of Parks and Recreation. Ride responsibly.
No matter what's bugging you this summer in your garden, the USU Extension Service Integrated Pest Management Program can help you find solutions. From free fact sheets and books to seminars and updated pest advisories, this website will point you in the right direction. To find these and other free resources, stop at extension.usu.edu/pests.
For the most cost-effective school safety solutions, look to FasterUtah.org.
Choose your adventure. With 45 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities.
Yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Woo!
at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure, explore Utah, and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov.
Hey, this is Nick Zaleski with Utah State University Extension's Integrated Pest Management Program. Let's talk about flea beetles. So flea beetles can have several hosts, including our coal crop, leafy greens, tomatoes, eggplant, peppers, beets, potatoes, melons, a lot of our seedlings, and many different weeds. So flea beetles get their names because adults jump when they're disturbed with their large hind legs. They can have metallic colored bodies that range from black, bronze, bluish, brown, or gray. And some species even have stripes. The larvae are very small, white, worm-like with a brown head. For the damage, the adults and larvae can feed with their chewing mouthparts. Adult feeding can cause these shallow pits, small round holes in the foliage, cotyledons, and stems. Flea beetles have 1 to 3 generations per season, and they can overwinter as adults on nearby weeds. Usually the adults will emerge from early April to mid-June, and adults can be found feeding on the foliage of host plants. Be sure to monitor seedlings in the spring for flea beetle presence and look again for those round holes in the leaves. Populations tend to build to their highest densities in mid to late summer. Use yellow sticky cards and visual scouting when seedlings emerge. Inspect crops for adult flea beetle injury near the field borders, especially with cruciferous weeds. Flea beetles are an annual problem in the spring and can cause cosmetic damage and or kill the small plants. So to manage flea beetles, remember to keep the crop area weed-free. Consider planting trap crops. Use row covers during the seedling establishment to exclude those adult flea beetles. And then be sure to eliminate old crop debris and other surface trash. Applications of insecticide may be needed, but remember that can be tricky since flea beetles are so small and highly mobile. If you have more questions or want to learn more about flea beetles or other pests, check out our website at extension.usu.edu/pests.
Y'all might think that a day on the lake is all fun and the sun on your bum, but you, my friends, are incorrect. Today, we're gonna feel the burn together while Roar gets you ready for a safe day on the lake. Not only do life jackets save your lives, but they make you look amazing. Let's get started. This first routine is an important one. You gotta zip it, gotta zip it, gotta click it, zip it, click it. Look at you, Terry.
Oh yeah, guys got it.
Fire down the boat. Wave to the boat. Scream for help. Help! What's wrong, Terry?
I just can't swim good.
Oh, that's okay, little bird. That's what this is for.
Oh.
Woo. Thanks to my exercise, I think you're ready for a safe day on the lake. Just remember, always wear your life jacket.
Now back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Mr. Ty Hunter joins us once again with Utah's boating program. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us.
Hey, thanks, Brian, and thanks everybody out there for listening to me with this again in another episode of some boating safety, especially right here in our warm summertime that we're experiencing right now. Those that may not own a boat, choose wisely when you have a rental. Utah requires rental companies to register with the state of Utah. That's one of the questions to ask. Is are you registered with the state of Utah? Main thing that that's going to do is to make sure that you have paperwork and a lot of the communications are occurring between you and the company. That's a big item there. But another one is go onto our website and there are some rental safety videos on our website that the United States Coast Guard funded. And So if you are renting a watercraft, either paddle sports or you're renting a personal watercraft or you're renting a boat, I would recommend for you to take a boating safety class. But if you want a quick class, I would really suggest that you get onto our site, click on the commercial boating. I'm going to probably change this and move some things around, but for right now, it's located in the commercial boating piece. And if you were to just go through that piece, I know it talks about outfitters and liveries and registering as liveries and all that stuff, but there are rental videos that are on there that are just amazing for folks to go through and have a very brief understanding before you go and rent. And if you're a company owner that's out there and listening, go onto this and find these videos. They are helpful. They're free. They were done for you. Unfortunately, they do not have Utah backgrounds, but the information is golden and will help you out in the long run.
You can't go wrong. I know we're running out of time real quick. Anything else you want to wrap up with? Again, we probably should point them once again to your main website for more information.
Yep. So our main website is boating.utah.gov. We're housed within the Division of Outdoor Recreation. And we would just love to have you come follow through, peruse through. The website, as all websites, are under construction. We are trying to stand up what we have now, what we're calling is the educational hub. And we are standing up a educational hub. And in that is going to have everything from life jacket safety to these ed courses to take. And it's that more information if you want it, how to fit a life jacket, to the ins and outs of going out and using a powerboat, to the ins and outs of going and using a personal watercraft, the ins and outs for paddlecraft, and where to get more information. So that's just some cool things that we have on our website. It's a work in progress, but all websites are. And our main thing is that we want to get things out there for you all. And if you get on there and you're like, man, it would be nice to have this, send us an email. Let us know. Our email is boating@utah.gov. So similar to our website, boating.utah.gov to boating@utah.gov. Let us know what you want to have on that website, and we will do our best to get that information on there to be able to help you out and those others that may want it.
I have so much respect for what you've been doing these past couple decades. You put so many amazing tools together for the audience out there. Thank you for your hard work. Thank you for trying to help the folks be safe and have fun.
Thanks. I'm probably not the most exciting person to listen to, but I want people to be safe. I want that. I know we had some discussions before, but I run a recovery team to where we recover drowning victims, and I just would rather practice than having to use this machinery and this technology. It hurts, but it also, as I told you, Brian, it's healing to bring closure and to serve people that are around. And that's why I'm hitting the life jackets, and I really want to be there. It's there. I've seen it. I've seen it save lives. They're not 100%. It's just like a seatbelt. Seatbelt's not 100%. There can be extenuating factors, but I guarantee you that life jacket will buy you that time. It'll help you get through that situation that you need to. And somebody can render assistance to you, or you could render assistance to yourself. And I guarantee you that. So just think of that, and thank you. Appreciate you guys a bunch.
Appreciate all that you do. And again, it buys you time. The odds go up when you do the right stuff. And bottom line, safety is fun. If you're safe, that ensures you got more days out on the water that you can spend with your family.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Just do the safe thing. And you can keep doing it until you can't do it anymore. And that's really what it is. Just keep yourself safe and do the safe things.
Mr. Ty Hunter joining us once again with Utah's boating program. Thank you again for taking a few minutes with us.
Thanks a bunch. Take care, everybody. Have a great summer.
Our region is facing an exceptional drought, and the potential for wildfire is high.
And agencies around the state are working together to meet the threat.
Wildfire could strike in your community next. Are you prepared? Plan ahead now by remembering, ready, set, go. Be ready by maintaining 100 feet of defensible space around your home and taking steps to harden your home and make it more fire resistant.
Be set by having a wildfire action plan and knowing what important items to take with you in the event of an evacuation.
And lastly, go. Evacuate early when a wildfire strikes in your area.
We're prepared.
We're prepared.
We're prepared for wildfire. Are you?
Don't let your next family outing end in tragedy. Don't drink and ride. Driving an OHV under the influence of alcohol is no different than driving your car under the influence of alcohol. Law enforcement officers will be out checking riders and operators of OHVs. You could end up seeing jail time, loss of driver's license, the same stiff penalties that apply to operating a car. This message is from the Utah Division of Parks and Recreation. Ride responsibly.
No matter what's bugging you this summer in your garden, the USU Extension Service Integrated Pest Management Program can help you find solutions. From free fact sheets and books to seminars and updated pest advisories, this website will point you in the right direction. To find these and other free resources, stop at extension.usu.edu/pests.
Back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Alex Grover joins us once again with Utah's Best Gardening. Enjoying the heat, I guess. Thanks for taking time with us.
Yeah, did you have to mention the heat already? I came back from visiting my mom down in St. George yesterday, and it actually feels cool up here. It was really brutally hot down there. Did you have to bring it up? I mean, come on.
Do you do any tricks like having some type of cooling, those little things they put around your neck to keep yourself cool, or a hat or anything in that direction?
I wear a hat because my eyes are very sensitive to the sun, and I would get a lot of sunburns on the top of my head at the point I'm at. Some people have a full head of hair. Still, I don't. So I've always got a hat on anyway. My boss tends to get it. After a while, he starts feeling it and puts a hat on for relief. My other coworker, she does not wear a hat. Of course, she's got long hair, and that shelters a lot of her body and the top of her body. So, again, I don't know the difference of hat because I always got one on. Even in the winter, it blocks out enough light that I don't have to squint at everything. Those coolant thingies, when I was in Afghanistan, a lot of people made them and sent them to us, and we couldn't wear them because they weren't uniform. If you can tuck it under something and hide it without there being a bulge, I suppose you could get away with it. But the other thing, too, is that your primary cooling is your own sweat, your own internal system. And so while those may be effective, again, I never actually used one. I might even still have some. My cooling system works actually relatively well, and so I don't feel the need for an augmented system, and I don't know if there's a value to it. But even some people are very keen on, I'm going to pour water on me, and I'm going to cool down that way. And reality is, for 90% of human beings, 99% of human beings, again, drinking the water is more effective than an external application. But if you have sufficient water, maybe do both, but I would never substitute a surface application or a cooling gadget over drinking a lot of water. I would never substitute that unless my system was truly broken and I couldn't sweat it out, because it's just more effective.
I like that advice. I appreciate you sharing that with us. That's cool.
Keep you from heat stroke, youngster.
Yeah, I get out of there when it gets too warm for me. I am pretty sensitive to the heat myself, and I drink plenty of water and everything, but there's a point I just melt into the ground.
You Northern European types just can't handle your sun.
That's right. That's right. I retreat once I start seeing too much sun and too much heat. The temperature gets too hot, I'm out of there.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's not, joking aside, that's not a bad thing. I mean, really, my boss, when he started at the company I work with, he worked at a facility down in St. George. And they would come in really early to dodge that heat because it's 90 degrees at night. And again, if I were in St. George, I would not be as cavalier about the heat as I am here. I mean, I take care of myself, but I'm used to it. It's just not as big a deal for me as it is for some people. But if we're in St. George, I know I would not deal with it well because I'm not adapted to that temperature. And going in at the age I'm at, in my 50s, I may not adapt. It's just a lot harder to adapt as you get older. And so, of course, I'm at the point now where I have to be careful because I'm on the downswing. Year to year to year, I can't handle as much. So that is one of the things that I have to struggle with is as I get older, I have to cut down. So far, that's not meant that I've had to be a lot more careful in the heat, but eventually it will. It will catch up to me. So that's another thing is you've got to realize what your abilities are and don't overextend it. And keep in mind, those abilities are going to change. You may still be young and flexible, but if you've been in an inside job for 5 years and you step back out there and say, I can do it, no, don't. And I've seen people come here from the Pacific Northwest and just struggle to adapt to our heat here, which has drawn negative attention to them. But the reality is they should not be working as hard until they've had a couple of weeks to adjust at minimum. And when I was in the Army, that's one thing they were very careful with. And it wasn't because they were being too easy on people or anything. The reality is people's bodies need time to adapt. It is not an instant process. If you try and make it an instant process, you will get somebody hurt. It may not be you, but if you hurt a coworker, I will hold it against you because you push them too hard. You just don't do that.
Great advice.
Summer has officially begun, and Sportsman's Warehouse has everything you need for your next outdoor adventure. From hiking to camping to shooting, ready for some fishing? Sportsman's Warehouse has all the rods, reels, baits, and nets you need for success. And hunting season will be here before you know it, so bring in your bows for free tune-ups. The best part of all is that at Sportsman's Warehouse, you'll find knowledgeable people who are passionate about what they do, and they will get you just what you need. Sportsman's Warehouse. Take it outside.
Put on your helmet. Let's go.
But, Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet, too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moonrise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
Travel, exploring the woodlands, the red rocks and streams. He's sharing his campfire from season to season. New places and people with stories and dreams. Through cadence of nature, the wilderness beckons. A song of the mountains rings out through the trees. The voice of the backcountry echoes forever. It carries the message, live wild and free. Wild and free. The song of the mountains is called.
Folks, you've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and Western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.